Off the Ball, GAA.
What do you actually think you're going to be doing in this game, you know? And I was like, well, something along the lines of standing on the edge of the square, catching balls, turning around and putting them in the back of the net, no?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.
Hello, hello. Happy Thursday afternoon. I suppose it'll be afternoon by the time you're listening to this. This is Word on the Street. If you haven't joined us here before, it's basically a podcast where we go out in the street and we get people's opinions and we talk about them here in the studio. And I'm so excited. Finally, the three of us are back. We're here. I actually don't know when the last time we did this. Eve, Rachel, it's going to be a good pod.
A long time ago. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm here skipping my teeth. Just got off the train.
You know? Sprinted. You actually arrived puffing and panting.
Puffing and panting, yeah.
That's the dedication, you know, to the podcast that we really appreciate.
Yeah,
you know?
Stormbrand, you were not kind to me. That's all I'm going to say.
Is the Green Line Lewis cancelled because of the storm or is separate reasons?
I think it's like compounded by the storm. There's some electrical fault and it has been the bane of my existence as well for like 2 days. I had to get up. I was in work for 10 this morning. I had to get up at 6:30 to get in here. Woe is me.
I was travelling home on the Dart the other day and it stopped for half an hour, not even at a station. Just in between two stations, just standing still.
Don't you just love public transport in this?
Oh, we love Dublin's public transport. But that is not the topic of the pod this week, although it could be.
Yes.
Say we'd get some good opinions. How do we relate that to sport is the real question. We'll find a way. But this week, it's Champions Cup season, I suppose you could call it. We're back in action in the rugby, in European rugby. And there's been a lot of talk, it was similar last year and the year before, about whether it's gotten boring, essentially. So the title of this pod is Jeopardy. Sorry, I'm looking at Rachel because she came up with that about 5 minutes before this podcast started. But it's very accurate. It's all about whether the pool stages and whether the games have lost a little bit of jeopardy.
Now, I will probably need a little bit of an explainer as to what's actually changed in the Champions Cup as someone who's coming from a football perspective where there has been lots of changes in similar competitions. I feel like I can relate to this. I just don't know why.
How
and why.
Me neither, to be completely honest, because it's the most confusing thing I've ever come across. And maybe I'm just dumb, but I don't think I am.
We should have gotten like a cork board for this with string.
Yeah. And just painted it for people. Honestly, need it. But from my somewhat confusing notes as well, I hope neither of you had to try and read these.
I did on the train. What a stress. I was like, it would actually be no harm if we stopped in Limerick Junction here for an extra hour so I can get my head around this.
It's not my fault, I promise. But basically, Champions Cup was founded in 1995. Back in the day, there were six pools of four. So six pools of four teams and there were 24 teams in the tournament. Quick maths, 6x4. And you had a home and away game in your pool. So you had six games in total. Three at home, three away. Then the top teams from each pool, so the top six teams, and the best two second placed teams made it through to the quarterfinals. And from there on, you're in knockout rugby. Mm-hmm. And it meant it was incredibly exciting because you pretty much had to win 5 out of 6 of your pool games. Maybe you could squeeze by winning four, but you'd have to have been pretty lucky with points difference and that kind of stuff. So it meant you really had to put your best foot forward for pretty much all of the games. Then it became 5 pools of 4 for 20 teams. The top teams and 3 of the best second places made it through to the knockout stages. So that was pretty much the same thing, just slightly less teams. Then in COVID, I don't know, they had a little bit of a breakdown.
They went crazy.
They, like most of the world, to be fair, so you can't really blame them. But for 2 seasons, they had 2 mega pools of 12. Teams in each pool, which I'm not even really sure how it
that's
worked.
Just a league.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That's just 2 new leagues pretty much.
Which would be fine if that's what you were branding it as. Like the URC is one massive league, but it was just a very confusing time for everybody involved. And then in 2023-24, they changed it again, but instead of changing it back to what they originally had, because bear in mind they had the same amount of teams, still 24 teams, they changed it to 4 pools of 6. instead of six pools of four. And it kind of happened because a lot of the English and the French teams were complaining that there were too many games overall, that it was too much kind of on the bodies of the players, and they needed to reduce that. So now the teams play four pool games, and you can't play another team in your domestic league. So, for example, in Leinster's pool, I can't remember who it is, but for example, they couldn't play the Stormers because the Stormers are also in the URC and you're not allowed to play somebody from your own domestic league. So you'll play a selection of four of the teams in your pool, and then four out of six teams progress to the knockouts.
Oh, I hate that.
So that's two thirds of the teams in your pool progress out of the group stage and into, now they have what they call a round of 16. Mm. So it's not the quarterfinals, it's a stage beforehand. So it basically means more teams make it out of your pool. More teams are in the knockout stages, but this is how we get to Jeopardy. There's less Jeopardy on the pool games.
You also don't play everyone in your pool. Why have them in a pool? What the pools are for. Play each other.
It's very strange. And like, you can't be drawn in your pool with, I don't know exactly what the rule is, but for example, Munster, Leinster, Connacht and Ulster couldn't be in the same pool. Because they're in the same country, basically. But obviously, that doesn't account for all the countries. It's
on paper, that makes a little bit of sense sometimes, because you're like, oh, you're going to be playing different teams. We're going to get to see our team play other teams. But the rivals are the people that you play often, you know, so you're taking that excitement out of it straight away, in that you're not going to have like teams that know each other really well coming up against each other early on, which is taking the excitement out of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's also the fact that it used to be home and away, was that if something happened in the first fixture, you know, something massive or a team scraped by a couple of points, it was like everyone was so anxious for the next game and so excited for the chance for revenge.
Because it was kind of back to back, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was around Christmas time, and it was like, you know, you build all this excitement up and everyone would have their eyes on the fixture. Now it's like, you know, if you lose by 50 points, meh. Yeah. You know, you could lose three games by 50 points and still make it through to the round of 16. So you really don't have to care about the competition until March.
Yeah, there's no incentive to win early days.
No. But before we give all of our kind of opinions, because, well, we already have started and obviously they're very clear and strong, but we're not the only ones that feel this way. And we were chatting to some people on the street today and they had a similar view.
I don't think there's the same interest in it as previous years.
We're basically asking people, has it gotten boring?
Yeah, I think the interest from English Premiership teams and the French Premiership teams has waned a bit. I think they're concentrating in their own home tournaments, which is taken away from the Champions Cup, in my opinion.
So do you think the pool stages have gotten less exciting to watch?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the excitement will be later on when it's knockout. So the pool stages definitely are not as exciting. Compared to other years, yeah, I think there was more excitement from the pre-Christmas games than there is at the minute. So yeah, I think it is diluted.
But I'm curious, so do you watch the pool stages anyway, even though they're...
Because I'm a genuine rugby fan.
What would you like to see then in an ideal world? Do you want it to go back to the format it used to be?
Yes, back to the original format.
Okay.
Yeah.
We were saying there, we just love how he said, I'm a real genuine...
I'm a genuine rugby fan. I loved that.
Yeah.
Because I think to be a genuine fan of something does mean that you will criticise it a lot, because you want it to be in the best space that it can be. Like, I will, and we'll talk about it later on, there's a lot of similarities in what's happening with football right now. And I will frequently and can criticise what they're doing, but it's because I love it, and it's because I want it to be as exciting as possible and as fun to watch and play as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm getting the sense that this new format, it just makes a bit of a slog watching something that you love, especially over the festive period, is... It's just not an enjoyable time.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's funny, because when we floated the idea of this pod about a week ago, I said, oh, I completely disagree with the fact that Champions Cup has gotten boring. And it was because, like, I love European rugby. This is the tournament that everybody looks forward to. It just has something else about it than URC, than anything. Even though I love the URC and it's a great league, this is just another level, and you get so excited about it. And I still do. Like, leading into these weeks and these weekends, I'm still like buzzing about the fact that we're going into Europe. But like, when you think about it and when you actually sit down to watch the games, they are just a bit anticlimactic.
I feel like so much of the time on this podcast, my opinion gets changed in a positive way when I learn something more about a topic. And I feel like perhaps this week for you, it's the opposite. Your eyes have been opened a little bit to the cracks in, in what's happening right now.
Yeah, and like it's not like just me or it's been talked about a lot online, and a lot of people even that we were chatting to today are kind of like, yeah, I'd watch it, but how much do I pay attention? How much am I really engaged in it? And we'll hear from someone who said that in a second, but I just want to read this first. The Telegraph published an article in January 2025 that said, according to BARB, which is an organisation that measures TV viewing, for at least one round of this year's Champions Cup, so that was last season, more people attended some games than they watched them on TV. So there were only 8,000 who watched Exeter versus Toulouse on TV versus 13,800 who went to Sandy Park. Now, those are small numbers in general. We do have to account for the fact that streaming, dodgy boxes, all that stuff, it's going to impact the TV viewership numbers, and we
allegedly,
know that.
Yes.
Allegedly. I wouldn't know anything about it.
No. Which is crazy.
Yeah, it is. So I'm sure those figures aren't fully accurate, but they still give you a sense of maybe not as many people are watching this as, you know, we think or we would expect.
Yeah, because we had a comment on Facebook from Christy who said, rugby is nowhere near big enough to be completely behind a paywall. It needs to be on terrestrial TV to grow the game. The format of the competition is a joke. Yes, there was dead rubbers in previous format, but at least you played home and away against the same teams, and now you might need to rely on a team you don't actually play against to win-lose in order to do better in the same pool. So she was kind of, she's echoing what you were saying earlier with the added point of, and it's not actually gaining an audience. These changes aren't actually improving the quality of the sport to the extent that people are watching it who didn't watch it before. And in fact, maybe we're going in the opposite direction.
Mm. So why would they have changed it? So like what? If you're the organising committee, obviously you've got cash dollar.
Yeah, so...
You know.
cash dollar bills. No, I think the main reason is that they wanted less games and more teams. So they introduced the South African teams into the fixture. So now they've got like... They're trying to expand the game. That's kind of the idea behind all of these changes, is to have more countries involved, have more eyeballs on it, and then to decrease the amount of games. But although, like, if you think back, okay, six pool games really does sound like a lot. But then now you add in the round of 16, you're actually only playing one less game than you ever were before.
Yeah.
So is it worth, you know, in my eyes, it's not worth saving one game for ruining a whole competition.
And it's obviously not even getting more eyes on it, because we had we were chatting to Kate, and she's actually saying, you know, I think that's the trend, is people are watching less.
Mm. Would you still watch it even though they are a little bit less exciting than they used to be?
I would still watch it, but I'd probably watch it less consciously. There are other games, and historically I would have planned my days around, oh, I want to be either sitting in the pub or sitting on the couch. The rugby's on at this time. I've less urgency to watch it, I suppose, and especially with, you know, time constraints of daily life, it makes it harder to want to prioritise it sometimes, which is sad, because I love rugby and I love watching it, and I think of myself as a loyal rugby fan, but when it isn't that exciting, sometimes games can get pushed to the side.
That's definitely true. I watched all the Irish provinces at the weekend. By that I mean I watched the Munster game, I watched the Leinster game, I watched Ulster in the Challenge Cup, because I just love Ulster at the moment. But I didn't really watch any of the others. I watched Bulls versus Bordeaux. Sorry, I know I'm speaking to this going over your head, but that was a brilliant game, and it was one of the few that was brilliant, because it was one of the two top teams and they both put their best teams forward. And that's been a real issue, in that because there's not a lot hanging on these pool games, because you don't have to win that many of them to make it out, people are playing their weaker sides.
Yeah.
Now, it's very hard to say with, you know, evidence that that is your weaker side and kind of punish them for it. But it's clear. I mean, Harlequins came over to Leinster last week because they knew. Sometimes it's because they know they're going to win, so they can put forward a weaker team. But sometimes it's because they know they're going to lose. And they're like, well, we're not going to waste the energy of our best players on a game we already know we're going to lose when we need to compete in our domestic league in 2 weeks' time. That's more important to us.
Especially with so many games this season, like for any players who were on, I mean, I don't know how this affects Harlequins or anything, but like, the whole host of lads out of the Lions all summer down in Australia. Was that where the tour was?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, I had to think about that for a second. Yes.
So it's like the amount of, even though there's only one less game, the amount of rugby that's being played this year is so much. Of course you're going to be managing minutes. And then of course that lessens the excitement.
Yeah, and I was chatting to Alan Quinlan this morning. I was saying this to you. It's gotten so confusing that I can't keep track of it. Like, I have an app on my phone that tells me what's going on in the Champions Cup so that I can figure out where people are in the table and what this win means, because you just, you can't like keep track of it in your brain. So I called him this morning to basically be like, can you give me a lowdown of what the heck is going on and what's changed and how can I keep track of it? And even he was a little bit confused trying to explain it to me. But he said, you know, one of the main things is that player welfare has gotten much bigger since he would have been playing in the Champions Cup. And that means your international, or your minutes, especially for internationals, are managed much more strictly. Which means, for example, those players who are on the Lions, they can't come back in, play six or three Irish tests, four game with Leinsters, and just keep going right into the yeah. Champions Cup. So we did see a lot of people rested for the first weekend. And that happens all the time. But yeah, I don't know. It's a funny one. There's not really an easy kind of solution
is
to the whole situation.
Solution, just bring it back to the way it was.
Yeah.
The fact that the amount of teams are the same, and it's definitely monster rose tinted glasses with me for the Heineken Cup, because like
Investec Champions Cup now.
Yeah. See,
you can't even call
it
that.
You can't even call it that. Yeah.
Can I say the Heineken Cup is a way better name?
Just the sponsorship. But
I just
yes.
like it. Yeah.
No, it is. And it's funny now, it feels like the Heineken Cup has become the epitome of everything that was good about the competition, and the Investec Champions Cup is like crap.
And again, it's so much nostalgia and everything. Yeah. And I'm sure if it was
just because we've won it as well, you know.
I would say Jack on Instagram raised a good point that I suppose that would be opposite to what I was thinking, but it's important to get in there, that he says there's some rose-tinted glasses around the old Heineken Cup. It has the same problem as the Rugby World Cup, where a post-pool cull is impossible. But the 20-8, I'm not sure exactly what he means there, but it was previously too much and created dead rubbers at the end of the pool stages because it was win or bust so much of the time, which is what people say is, you know, the issue now with dead rubbers. But he raises a fair point that by the end of the pool stages, you'd know pretty much who was coming out of that pool and who wasn't. So those last few games might have been a bit of dead rubber. But you had some really exciting games around Christmas, around now, and in the build-up to that. But he does say he's a Glasgow fan, and it was really hard for Glasgow to ever get out of their pool because they didn't have the strength and depth that some of the other bigger teams would have. So he said they won a Pro 12 before they got out of a pool under the old format of the Heineken Cup. He says, if you support a team like Leinster that goes on a run every year, I can see why you might want the old format back. But unless you're them or Toulouse, then you're going from always having some chance of a deep run as the round of 16 as a springboard. So basically you always have a chance of potentially making it through the knockouts, to being in a 4-team pool where the only guaranteed way to get that run is to win your pool. And he says in brackets, as Glasgow found out on the multiple occasions they went out in the pools despite coming second in their section.
Yeah, would we be giving out if they were like a group of death and say, oh, you're with whatever Leinster and the Bulls and Toulouse or something? You're like, oh, I don't have a hope. Bring the old format back. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's competitive sport. And
yeah, the best are meant to get through.
Yeah, this is like Munster Hurling Championship debate to a T.
Oh, really?
I think so. Like, five teams play in the Munster Hurling Championship, and every year you have no idea who's going to come out. Like, Tipperary won the All-Ireland this year. Last year they didn't get out of Munster. Last year Clare won the All-Ireland. This year they didn't get out of Munster.
And why is it just
it's so competitive?
Okay.
You know, so there's been calls for a fourth team to be allowed to come out of Munster and Leinster as well. And I won't get into the details, but like the last 16 in rugby, we've got preliminary quarterfinals.
Okay.
So like there's a secondary competition in the hurling and the winners of that go into the preliminary quarterfinals, but they very rarely get far, you know. Mm-hmm. 11 out of the 12 times I think they've played, they've lost. So it's like, people are giving out saying, oh, the hurling, some of the best teams are finished playing in May, which is a pity, but it's competitive sport. You know, like if you're going to win, you have to be the best.
No, I agree. Like Ulster, and I love Ulster this year, don't get me wrong. I think they're playing the most exciting rugby of any of the provinces in Ireland. But last year, they weren't performing that well. They lost all but one of their pool games in the Champions Cup. Still managed to make it through to the round of 16, which is insane. Now, to be fair, if they had made it, I think it would have been the Sharks also with only just one win. So it was going to happen either way. But then, to be fair to them, they played Bordeaux in the round of 16, who went on to win the whole thing. They didn't get hammered.
And it's always good losing to the lads who go on to win it.
No, it is. But it is just a little bit like, they were never going to win that game.
Yeah. It's almost like everybody gets a medal.
Yeah, and it's a little bit like, what's the point of putting in this round of 16 where they come out and yes, they get to play in one more leg of this competition.
Especially if player welfare is so important. And
yeah.
You're talking about resting
and
players.
And they're going to lose it anyway.
It's the exact same debate that's happening in football, and it's kind of on everyone's minds right now because the World Cup is coming next summer. And so
don't get me started on World Cups. You go first.
So the last World Cup in 2022 had 32 teams in Qatar, and now the next one, which is being held in Canada, United States and in Mexico, there's 48 teams. And 104 matches.
I read this. 104 matches across three countries and four time zones. Just to make things even simpler.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, I will sound like a massive hypocrite when I talk about the World Cup and we're allowing in all these smaller countries and it's more, you know, there's more games that mean less, if you get me.
Yeah.
But we are one of the smaller countries.
Yeah.
You know, and the excitement that's built around since Troy Parrott, you know, had that magical week and scored that hat-trick and got us through. And we're able to ride that high until our next round of qualifiers in March. And I'm already, in my head, we're already going to be playing Mexico in our first group stage game, should we qualify.
It's like Jack with Glasgow. It's like when you are that team, you absolutely want it to stay the way it is.
Exactly. But we, when we were out talking about the rugby today, I wanted to get a few football opinions as well. So we met Graham, who is a Crystal Palace fan. He's over because Palace are playing Shelburne this evening in the Conference League. But I was asking him about his thoughts on this World Cup. So do you think it's sort of the same thing with the World Cup now having more...
Absolutely. I mean, we're just going to ram in more teams. I mean, it's very pleasing, of course, that the globe can all integrate and enjoy the occasion. But in essence, it's, you know, get more teams, games on TV, more money, longer, etc., etc. Players from being run into the ground. I mean, they're being paid a fortune, but in essence, the players mentally and physically, you know, there's a ceiling to what they can actually manage.
There's too many games, is it?
Oh, absolutely too many games, yeah.
Will you still be watching the World Cup next summer?
I will watch it, yeah.
This is my favourite thing about everybody we've spoken to today. But it's not hypocritical because I feel the exact same way. Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.
And I think that's just sport, isn't it? You know? But the World Cup is a funny one because I think I will change my tune if we don't qualify at the same time, which is incredibly hypocritical and goes against... But I will still watch it. Listen, there's far bigger problems with this current World Cup in terms of, like, FIFA giving a peace award to Donald Trump and very serious security concerns around kind of entering into the United States and people being safe there and all this kind of stuff. Those are, like, really valid criticisms that will be written and lot about in the next few months. But, like, on a very unimportant, biased surface level, there are too many teams unless Ireland is one of them.
I love that. Yeah. Do you think the format, because maybe I just don't read football news enough, but it's everywhere in the rugby how much an issue the format changes are. Has it slipped under the radar a little bit in the football because of all the other issues? Or
see, I think if we're talking about format specifically, the Champions League is the best place to look, because and the Europa League and the Conference League, because for years this was like the golden standard of European football, where you have same as kind of the old rugby, you would have had, you know, a group stage of 32 teams divided into 8 groups of 4, and, you know, it was very well organised and everyone knew you play home and away and you had, like, home and away goals, so, like, aggregate scores, everything like that. And then in 2024-25 it changed to a league stage, and I'm just going to read out the rules of this because there's a lot. So
I'm just going to stare into space for this bit.
So instead of 32 teams, they've increased it to 36. It's now a single league competition where you will play 8 games, 4 home and 4 away, but you're not playing against the same team home and away.
Okay, so that's like the Champions Cup, yeah.
That's basically, it's really similar. Games, you know, you're decided who you're going to play based on ranking and 4 seeded pots, and each team will play 2 opponents from each of these pots, right? And so then you basically get 3 points for a win, same as in, like, your domestic league. So the top 8 teams in the league, once all the matches are over, will qualify automatically for the knockout stages. Then 9th to 16th will have a 2-legged knockout phase playoff, secure their place.
I'm already lost.
25th, yeah, I told you.
I know. 25th and down are knocked out. And it used to be if you got knocked out of the Champions League in the old group stages, you would drop down to the Europa League. But that's not a thing anymore. So going back to me being an incredibly hypocritical and biased person, my team, Tottenham, won the Europa League last year under these new rules and this new league phase and no team dropping down from the Champions League. So I love it. I think it's very good. I think it's, I don't hate it as much as a lot of other people do. I think the league phase has some benefits. I miss the home and away and the aggregate scores because I think that was, they, what we're talking about with Jeopardy, it made results really need to matter. Goals yes. matter so
different.
Much.
Different. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You have, it's the same with the rugby. Like, you have your UC, you have your league. Mm. Like, keep the European competitions
keep the league,
like
the league.
Something separate.
Yeah.
Cliona Foley was on the Sunday paper review this week and she just made such a good point. She's like, you know, one of the most exciting things about like World Cups used to be you'd get the wall mapper and you'd put it up and she was like, there's too many teams now, you wouldn't even fit it on the wall. No. You know, it's like, that's perfect. Like, it sums it up so well.
Fully.
Exactly.
What's interesting in the football is that it's, I think, a lot to do with money. I was reading an article in the 42 by a very young Gavin Cooney. And I just really liked his quotes. He said, ceaseless tweaking is largely a product of greed. More competing teams means more matches, which means more money. He also said, quote, if you're explaining, you're losing. I think that just wraps everything up so nicely. Like, we don't know what's going on, whether it be football, whether it be the rugby. Like, it's really difficult to understand compared to the way it used to be. It used to be, you know, top two teams come out, top one team, whatever. You know exactly how it works, how the system's going to work. Now it's like, I can't keep track of any of it.
And I feel like, sorry, I feel like you have like people, fans of sport who've been around for a really long time and watching sports for a really long time who are endlessly frustrated by this constant, you know, desire for more money for these, you know, organisations. And our lovely friend Graham, Crystal Palace fan, is one of these people. You know, he talked to us about, you know, what this money culture means to him.
The Conference League is league, and it should really, historically, all cup competition, so it's all about the money, unfortunately, but it's generating as much as possible. So the real supporters, you know, just suffer, quite frankly, with different times, different dates, costs, etc.
Would you have rather that Crystal Palace were playing in the old group stage format?
I'd rather Crystal Palace were playing in the Cup Winners' Cup, quite frankly. But I'm an old boy, so you know, I've been watching Crystal Palace for 60 years. And if you won the, if you won your domestic cup, then you went into the cup competition. If you won your domestic league, in essence, you could be champions of Europe, and you haven't actually won your Europe, your actual domestic league, for the last 60 years, such as Newcastle United, maybe.
It's the bells tolling in the background for me.
It makes you feel very Christmassy.
Oh, I was thinking it's like the death of football. Funeral bells.
That just shows how differently our brains work. But anyway, I didn't get to listen to much of it because I was listening to the bells.
it's basically, he's explaining a lot of the issues that I would have with, you know, kind of with where the sport is going is different from where you were growing up watching it. And I feel like this is what we were talking about earlier on with that sense of nostalgia and looking back at everything that came before with rose-tinted glasses. And this is what I found particularly interesting. Sorry to be going into another clip so quickly, but we were chatting to two more Crystal Palace fans, a father and son who are over for this game. They're very lovely. And we were chatting to AJ about this league format. And AJ was like a young teenager, so this is kind of his first exposure to Europe because Crystal Palace's first time in Europe. This is the only exposure he's had
to this. He was so excited.
A, so excited, very adorable. But B, has a different perspective from kind of people who grew up watching a different version of the sport. So here's AJ. Obviously, as Crystal Palace fans, you're just probably happy to be in Europe. Yeah. What's it like being in Dublin this week?
I mean, it's just great. I mean, I never thought when I was watching my team in the Championship that I'd be watching them play in Dublin in Europe one day. So it's just great. Even though it's not as good as a competition as maybe the Champions League, it's good to just be in Europe.
And do you like the new European formats with the league phase, or would you rather you were playing in the old group stage?
To be honest, I quite like it. You don't have to do the legs. You get teams pushing on more for results and you get to go see more places, so it's good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've been quite negative Nancy so far on the pod, but there definitely are some benefits to it, I suppose, in terms of, I said earlier that, you know, in rugby they're just trying to grow the game and that's one of the reasons why they're expanding Now, the Champions Cup is slightly different because they still have the same amount of teams, I feel. But, I mean, I suppose it expands across more continents, more countries, more locations. But the Rugby World Cup, as I kind of reacted to your thing earlier, but it has also changed. So next year, from 2027, we're going to basically see a new format of the Rugby World Cup. And they're going to have 24 teams instead of 20, so four extra teams. And it's the first World Cup ever to include that round of 16 that I was talking about. So you come out of your pool stages, you play in the round of 16, which is your first knockout round, then into the quarter, semis, finals. So you've got a total of 52 matches, up from 48. So four more games in total. But it's a frustrating one because, again, similar to the Champions Cup, and there was a comment somewhere, I can't find it now, but that was basically like, I hate it. It's just going to follow Europe, which has already been a failed experiment in a lot of people's eyes. So I think just having the round of 16, automatically people are like, this didn't work. Why are we doing it in something as big as the Rugby World Cup?
Yeah.
But there are some benefits to it. And I think Kate, again, she spoke earlier on the kind of watching it less, but she outlines quite nicely how it is a way of getting more people to play more rugby.
It's great. I think that there's more teams in it. You know, we always want to see more countries playing rugby and investing in rugby and making it a more global sport. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, pushing some of maybe the bigger players and pushing them and driving them to be better. But it does create this, especially with the way they've done it for 2027, it does create this situation where you can kind of see how Ireland's path might work out unless there was a big upset. Within moments of the draw being announced, you had pundits mapping out Ireland's route to hopefully finally get out of a quarterfinal. So it's not great for competition, but it does inevitably make it less exciting. I don't know what the solution is to it, though.
I don't know what the solution is either. Neither did Alan Quinlan, by the way. He just kept repeating to me on the phone, like, what can you do? which it does feel like, what can you do? But yeah, I don't know. I see both sides to it. Like, I do like that there's more teams. And, like, when I was doing the Champions Cup launch there a couple of weeks ago, I was chatting to, I've immediately forgotten his name, but one of the props who plays for Toulouse, and he's Spanish. And, like, chatting to him about what it means for Spain to be able to go to this World Cup and how massive it is for that country and to grow the game in Spain, like, getting to see heroes, in a way, make it to a World Cup, getting to watch that on TV. I get that. Then at the same time, as Kate said, like, as soon as that draw came out, now, I couldn't understand a thing, because it was like, pool D, runner-up will play pool E, and then we'll play pool C if it goes this way. And I was like, what the heck? But you do know that, bar anything major happening, it's going to be Ireland and Scotland. Really, what matters is which of them comes out first for the route of who they'll play then in the round of the 16 and the quarters and the semis. So it is like, what are you watching the rest of the games for, almost?
Does it kind
of... Very cynical of me.
Does it cheapen it if Ireland's first knockout stage win comes in like a round of 16 and not a quarterfinal?
Yeah, I don't understand the hype about this. I don't think it counts. Like, I don't think a round of 16 is the same thing as a quarterfinal. I don't think coming out of the round of 16 breaks the quarterfinal curse.
No, not at all. No, it's preliminary, like, quarterfinal.
Yeah. Like, people saying, like, this is Ireland's first chance, like, I don't think the players will feel that way either,
isn't it? But just going back to that, I don't know. Are we coming from such a privileged position here in Ireland, where
we are?
Know, the World Cup format for me isn't so bad, you know, because it's what, maybe one extra boring game compared to what seems like quite a few in the rugby,
Champions Cup.
Champions Cup, yeah. And so, like, if it's going to make so much of a difference to a country, like, the boost of sending. We all saw Troy Paris, like, the boost of a country going to a World Cup, and, like, we've been to them before.
Yeah.
Like, if this is going to be someone's first chance to compete, go for it.
And it's almost reversed the football and the rugby Ireland situation. Yeah.
And I will also say, I think I mentioned earlier that kind of there's more games that mean less. When the World Cup is on, I will be watching those games that mean nothing. The timings are a bit weird for, obviously, it being in kind of North America, where the games are on, I think, something like 5, 8 and 2 a.m. or something like that. But in the last World Cup, the games are on at like midday, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m. I was in like second year of college, and I'd be in the library studying for my Christmas exams, and I would have my laptop on a split screen essay, and then like Morocco against.
Oh, I was on Togo a plane for that Morocco game.
Yeah.
Everyone on the plane was watching it at once, and we were like, "This is the most exciting flight."
How did you watch it on a plane? Was there Wi-Fi?
They had it on the
screen.
The
screens. Oh, that's
it was
cool.
A long haul, like, and we were all invested.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And I was thank you, Morocco.
Thank you, Morocco. I would like come home from college then, and I would go to the pub, and I'd watch the next match. Then we come home from the pub, and I would get all my flatmates, and I put it on our projector, and then we'd watch the final game of the day. Mm. And it was, I watched so much football in those few weeks, and it was, Ireland weren't even in it, and it was such a good, incredible World Cup.
Yeah, we were chatting to someone on the street today who had a similar view in the rugby that a World Cup is a World Cup, you're going to watch it anyway. And also, some of the underdogs might actually surprise you. Okay, so obviously Rugby World Cup, they have a new format for 2027.
Yeah.
There's more teams than ever before in the pools and more teams making out of it because they've got this round of 16 now.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it in general?
Well, I kind of think that it undermines the championship a little bit because they're bringing weaker teams in, so you're still going to see the most advanced teams progressing from the pool stages. That said, from a selfish point of view, looking at Ireland, for example, it gives them a greater chance of getting beyond where they've gotten to in previous tournaments. So
break the quarterfinal curse.
Exactly, yeah.
But is it, like, I don't want to say boring, but is it a little bit difficult that you can predict Ireland's path almost from now, because you know, bar a major mishap, Ireland and Scotland will make it out of the pool.
Yeah.
It's just in what order they make it out of the pool that matters.
Yeah.
So it almost feels like really there's only one game in that pool stage worth watching, which is Ireland Scotland.
Yeah, to a degree, like, but I always look to the so-called underdogs. Like, those, both of those teams will be fairly physical. They'll want to raise their game to play against somebody like Ireland. I think Ireland will want to put out a relatively strong team, but also at the same time give some new guys, younger guys potentially, a bit of a chance in those games as well, which is important because I think what we're seeing from Ireland over the last number of years is that it's the old guard, and there's very few new talents, very little new talent coming through. So I think the more we see it at, the better.
Joel Merkler, by the way, was that Spanish prop that plays for Toulouse that I was referring to. Thank you, Brona. double thumbs up from the box there. But he does make a good point as well, that not only could we be surprised by the lower ranked teams, which has happened, that infamous Japan win against Ireland in the World Cup, which broke everybody's hearts and put us in a quarterfinal against New Zealand. Not that it's living in my head or anything like that. But also that, you know, there's an opportunity to play some of your, I don't want to say weaker players, but some of your younger players, not only give them a World Cup experience, but rest people
for 101 in the Women's World Cup this year. Like,
and how class was she when then she came on? No, she was still injured. But like Johnny Sexton as well in the 24 World Cup. Was it 24 or 23? 24. 23. World Cup, like, he played, I think, almost every single game. And then by the time it came to the New Zealand quarter, you know, he was still class, but He was an older player. He must have been wrecked. I think he played the full 80 there as well. And eventually Ireland didn't get over the line. Yeah. And it didn't work. Their plan didn't work. So, you know, maybe there is benefit in having a few easier games on the way up and then dominating.
Yeah,
world domination.
Unfortunately, I think my word in the studio is just going to be nuance.
Nuance.
Yeah, it's kind of good. That's just my word in the studio. There is good and bad in it.
Oh, that makes sense. You know? Sorry. That was rude of us.
Yeah, guys.
Rachel's look just made me laugh.
I know words and things.
You actually do. Snaps for Eve. Am I allowed to announce it on word of the
thank
street?
You.
She got her college results today and a distinction in her master's, so
I had like
so she does know words, and she knows words a lot better than the rest of us, actually.
She's got the paper to prove it.
I'm good at them. I'm good at words.
I do English well. my word on the studio is, I actually agree with your word, nuance. It's confusing. It depends on the situation. I do think, though, Champions Cup, please just bring it back to what it used to be.
Yeah, that's my word in the studio. Bring it back. I'd love to see that home and away, like pretty much back-to-back pre-Christmas, that kind of fun. Bring that back.
Yeah, and the excitement of European rugby again. But that's been it for this week. If you want to get in touch with us, as always, you can do so on socials at Off the Ball, or you can contact us at 0879 180 180.
Well,
that's
done.
It, isn't it?
Oh,
look at that! I'm getting professional at this whole thing. But we'll be back next week with more Word on the Street.
United final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.